resolution at paragraph 32 on page 8.
Sorry, 32?
Yep. About five lines up from the bottom. There's a sentence that reads, this is the only remaining area of short tussock grassland on public land. I wish to correct that. Taken me a while to actually realise this is not public land per se, so I'd like to change that to this is the only remaining area of publicly accessible short tussock grassland that I know of.
Right.
Bit of a distinction to be made.
Yes, that's right. If you got really technical, you wouldn't say it's publicly accessible because actually private land still at the moment hasn't yet been vested as open space land.
Yeah, that's become apparent.
Yes.
For many, many years, I actually thought it was just council open space reserve.
Yeah. But how? I got the point in mind. That's
right. So I'll just go through and just flip through. When I find something, I think I'd just like to reiterate
sure.
on.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So just in terms of the basis of my giving evidence, I'm very aware of the difference between an expert witness and an advocate, and I did feel prepared for a submission. So I have refrained from writing any evidence about the effect of the development of this plan change will allow, because I cannot do that. But I can present expert evidence on the position of the ONL line, because I prepared that in my professional capacity well before this was notified.
Right.
So we have done long ago. Plus, I was involved in the 2003 proceedings in the background. I didn't actually give the evidence, but I assisted Ms. Lucas in preparing it. Page 3. I think paragraph 9 is important just to revisit that. It's only really come to my realisation fairly recently that when you're identifying ONL, you're not restricted to the rural general zone. And I think that's sort of been a bit of a misconception actually, that anything outside rural general doesn't matter. It doesn't have you can't classify it. But in fact, the Resource Management Act, of course, doesn't distinguish between zones.
No.
That's zone neutral.
Yeah.
So the council, under Section 6. B has an obligation to protect outstanding natural landscape wherever it may fall, whichever zone it may fall into, which may even include an urban zone. Okay, so I think that's a very important thing to remember. Obviously, my overall conclusion is that most of the plan change site, I've said essentially all of it, is ONL, and I did explain before about why you could perhaps leave out the lower western end that faces us, the totally modified part. But equally, if it was rehabilitated, it could become part of ONL. We're sort of tinkering here a little bit, so I don't think it's really that critical at this stage. But essentially, Ms. Reid and I concur on where the line goes, and we concur when we undertook pre-proposed plan notification where that line would be, and that's what's shown in the proposed district plan map, which I've attached as figure 2 in my attachment. Now, we did discuss before Mr. Holte presented the idea that when you're doing ONL lines, it is necessarily at quite a large scale, and certainly it has been to a large scale in terms of district wide assessment. So that plan was, that attachment, figure 2, was done at a fairly large scale, so it's not a very clear plan when it comes down to talking about one particular site. So that's why I prepared figure 1, which shows it in more considered smaller detail, you're actually honing in on a particular area. But even there, it's still a fuzzy line as such. It's not a distinct line, but I think the line that we concur on is in fact quite sharply defined, at least where it wraps around the base of the, it's actually the southeastern end, not the eastern end, because there is a very distinct juncture between the flat, outward channel floor, and then the slope. And that is actually a much more distinct line than one that runs along the crest, which is actually quite hard to identify on the ground exactly where that is unless you go out with a field light. So Mr. Espy suggested that the line that we choose, the blue line, is less topographically distinct than the crest, and I would disagree with that. I think the line that we show is far more distinct, not just in terms of the landform, but also in terms of the land use. You've got cleared land or pre-residential cleared land redevelopment and then natural slope. It's quite distinct. And that coincides with the open space boundary, which also coincides with a change in management. So it seemed to me to be very sensible and logical from a number of perspectives that that's where the line should be. And it is a much more distinct line than the generally fuzzy line we often have to deal with. It becomes a little fuzzier towards the west end because of the modification that's already been, that's already happened, and it becomes a little more fuzzy when it goes up through the steep forest because of the tree cover. And if you also turn to photo one in my attachments, the main reason, one of the main reasons really that we concluded that the line should not be along the crest is because the landscape character is identical either side the broad area that includes the crest. You can see in that figure, photo one, the crest would be pretty much through the middle. And there's no difference either side in terms of landscape character. Certainly not in terms of ecological character either. And if you look at that right-hand image up there, why would you draw a line right through the middle when you're talking about areas of landscape, consistent landscape character, which is pointed out before you went Ridge Valleys? If you took the ridge line as the boundary, it would run through here, but then it just sort of comes up and just runs through here. And from the landscape character perspective, that doesn't really make sense. And I'll explain why in a moment, why it was perhaps decided on then in 2005. So yes, it's right here, the next point. Now, when that line was decided, there was a huge focus on the lake landscape, the views from Lake Wanaka. So that was the prime area of concern. And that, at least, was definitely agreed that was all ONL. And it was kind of a fixation with that lake landscape. But ONLs don't have to be a lake landscape to be an ONL. I think that was something we need to remember. The other main point is when that line was decided, the rest of Peninsula Bay was quite an attractive, rolling, open, pastoral landscape with pumps of Karnaka and gullies and natural landforms. It was classified VAL. And at that time, it was sensible that the south-facing part of the ridge contained that VAL landscape and flowed into it far more logically. Of course, it's all gone now. So the context for calling it VAL on this side of the ridge is gone. Cannot call it VAL anymore, plus it's too small. So the only logical outcome really is, when you think about the consistency of character, it's a whole landform, it's not half a ridge, it's a whole ridge. Its natural values have increased, as I've set up. It just made a lot more sense that it becomes ONL instead. I think in my photographs 5 to 6, you can see how it was classified as VAL, and it's a very attractive landscape prior to development. So I think that was one of the reasons why that ONL line was put along the ridge. A, because there's a real focus on the lake landscape, and B, because the remainder on the other side was considered part of the VAL landscape, which is clearly irrelevant now. Be made was that because the south side of the ridge is in the same landscape as an extensive built-up area, then it cannot be part of ONL. Now, it would be great if that argument in a way was applied to the Wanaka Water Sports Facility, which is an undoubtedly ONL landscape, judging by the passion that the submissions against it and for it. Yet it's completely within an urban area. So to say that you can't have ONL because it's adjacent to or surrounded by urban landscape doesn't stack up. And as far as I'm aware, there's no provision in the plan that prevents an ONL directly abutting up to rural, residential or urban landscape either. So the fact that it's seen in conjunction with a suburban area doesn't preclude it from being ONL. And then I go on to say that the development of Peninsula Bay in fact has elevated values of the northern ridge because of the visual context. ridge line is the foreground to the views of Peninsula, Mount Burke, the Minarets, Mount Gold. You see it, those mountains directly above it is the foreground. It's a logical full stop to the suburban landscape, which is on the floor and the ridge contains it. Keeping the ridge natural is important for legibility of glacial landforms. The story of Wanaka is geomorphological history. Another thing that I picked up reading Mr. Espy's and other evidence was that there's been very little assessment of the effect, or the value, I should say, not the effect, of that northern ridgeline on the experience of people using the current recreation reserve track along the top of Peninsula Bay, which is very popular. And it's not just used by local Peninsula Bay people, it's used by people from all over Wanaka. So it's valued by people from all over Wanaka. And this is the track above Forest Heights. You go to the car park and you go up there with your dog or your bike. A lot of people bike through there, a lot of people run through there, a lot of people have their dogs through there. I use it regularly myself, probably at least once a week, not twice a week, and have done since we moved to Rata Street many years ago. So to say that it's a localised effect or a localised value is just simply not true. It's valued much more than just for the local community as the backdrop to their suburban setting. And I've got photographs of examples of views from that track, photographs 3 and 4. Attachments. And as you, I'm sure you've walked that track already, but you can see how the ridge is a really important natural foreground to the peninsula.
No, we were up there this morning, photograph 2, very similar to where we were standing, I think, in memory. What that area you're talking about. Yes, above Forest Hill, Forest, what was it, Forest Hill Road?
Forest Heights.
Forest Heights.
Yes, the one. Yeah. And when you, I mean, I'm speaking from personal experience here, but when you use a track like that, a piece of open space, and you use it many, many times, the value of that landscape that you're recreating in, especially when the expectation was that it was open space, and it's going to stay open space, the value of it gets higher and higher. It becomes part of that special landscape that makes Wanaka a great place to live. And I think that's overlooked, actually, somewhat, how important this seemingly small, but it's actually a really important piece of landscape, not just the local Peninsula Bay community, but the wider Wanaka community as well. And that's really important as a basis for signing outstanding natural landscape as the shared and recognised values in honour. I guess the other main part is the ecological significance. When that decision process went through in 2003 to 2005, we were really only just beginning to use threatened environments classifications to understand what they meant, certainly for landscape architects. And the national priorities for protection of biodiversity and private land didn't come until 2007, so that's well after. So we know a lot more now about the value of these areas than we did then, and we also know how significant they are. And at the same time, as Mr. Olte said, they're fast disappearing. What we've got left is increasingly more valuable, and that's a key part of the outstanding value of this particular area, is that even though it is modified, it's depleted, as far as I know, that's the only piece left of short tussock grassland that you can easily get to from Wanaka. It's all gone, pretty much. And even out in the basin, it's fast disappearing, as we said before. And this is the only piece that I know of that's actually reasonably diverse enough to appreciate what a pesky tussock grassland should actually look like. The one on Mount Iron is virtually gone. It used to be quite healthy, but now even the tussocks are virtually gone and must be the last thing to go because of the rabbits up there. They're just eating everything. And it's now bare dirt and erasing in most cases. So that's really unfortunate, but there used to be the main area of pesky tussock grassland that you could have some idea of what it used to be like. Now this area, Plan Change 1, is the only piece left that I know of around Wanaka. So it's become really important. And as I said, it does contain species that are classified as at risk, one of which the applicant was fined. It's Raiolia viverdii, that was mentioned. And Raiolia parkii is there as well, and that's in the current appendix tonight. And it's possible, because there haven't been any spring annual surveys, there may be spring annuals which are often critically endangered or nationally threatened species, so we don't know if they're there or not, because it hasn't been surveyed. But it's the kind of place where they could exist. So in terms of that vegetation community, the short tussock grass is really interesting from a botanical or botanizing point of view for those of us who actually are interested to get down on our hands and knees and look at the diversity, which you don't appreciate from standing height. Actually, you do have to get down on your hands and knees often to really appreciate what's there. And it's like opening up a whole new world.
Right. Yeah. I hope you didn't do that on our side, did it?
Yeah, and if you did it now, it's not even at its best. It's in spring.
Yes.
And in terms of the statement that, oh, it's all going to disappear if you don't manage it, well, that grass has been there since pre-European times. It wasn't put there by Europeans. It's grown there and it stayed there, despite all the pastoral use, despite the spread of kanaka. There isn't actually a lot of spread of kanaka up there. There's not a lot of young growth. There are different age groups, but it's not rampant spreading of kanaka by any means. And if we value these remnants of short tussock, there is no reason why a community group could not decide to manage that for its tussock grassland values and keep the kanaka at bay if it was threatening tussock grassland, certainly keep the wilding trees out of it. So the management side of it is another issue. And there's no reason why it cannot be managed for its grassland values. And you cannot replicate these grasslands either. They're just too diverse, and a lot of species you can't even buy anyway. Especially and some of the species are difficult to grow, and in fact, we don't even know if they can be grown. So, I think that pretty much brings me to the end of points I wish to make my evidence, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay, thanks for that. Now, you might not be able to help us here, but I'll ask anyway. This one here, this came from, I think it's back to being variation 15.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the court, I think in its decision, talked about area 5 as being an area not suitable for housing and development.
Yep.
Now, to your knowledge, I mean, that... I guess what I'm trying to work out now is where that boundary is between Area 5 and Area, you know, AA5 and AA1.
I suspect that boundary, and I'm not certain, but it looks like it might be the old O&L line, the Ridgecrest line.
Right.
Because as I said, there was such a focus on the lake landscape.
Yes.
That was really the prime.
Yeah.
But my understanding is it also came to recognise that even AA1 was important being the south side bridge, because ultimately that's where the open space is.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gets a bit less certain down the southwest end.
Southwest.
Where the AA1 words actually are.
Around there.
Yeah. Oh, so the AA1 area there is already partly developed anyway. It's part of the subdivision.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah. I was particularly interested, I guess, in that
the topography's been changed so much now that it's hard to
know what
that line
was based on.
Actually
yeah, that's right. Okay. Sorry, yeah.
Just a brief one. I was involved about 6 years ago with the OA. They got this National Indigenous Vegetation then go to the ORC, which does some work in this area. I'm not sure whether you were involved in that one or not. There was mainly work with local landholders, and the focus there seemed to be mainly on grey shrubland throughout Wapato. There was no mention of the tussock, fescue tussock grassland. Have we got it elsewhere in the area?
There is some. Examples are around Tiawa Road, key areas where there's some left, even on those rural lifestyle blocks. You're probably aware of the Innes case 2 years ago.
We lost
a very large area of remnant fescue tussock grassland there, which was a very unfortunate outcome for all concerned. That was one of the largest remaining areas at the time. Now that that's gone, we're pretty much limited in what we've got left. Cross Hills, I guess, is the other area where you'll find. Now that's, if you're heading out through Albert Town, go over the bridge, on your left you've got the terraces stepping up. There is short tussock grassland on there.
So it's a lower species that you don't find on the piece of range, for example?
No. It's more of a montane basin floor, too low to mid altitude. Usually the higher up you go, I'm slightly getting out of my area here, but snow tussock used to be the cover higher up, but with modifications, short tussock, but it tends to be silver tussock or fescue will become a community. Fescue tussock as a natural community just typically on outwash plains, low fertility sites, and particularly at the lower altitudes. Of course, the same places that have all been found up and developed. And, yeah, so there's not a lot left. Particularly the healthier communities where you can actually have an idea of what the diversity should be like. Because a lot of the ones that are very depleted are virtually just the tussocks, and then everything else in between is exotic. So they look like fescue tussock grasslands, but they lack the integrity. But even amongst the exotic grasses, now I've got a client at the moment who's got what looks like complete depleted, hardly worth it, mostly exotic grass. But if you get down, toss it around, you'll find the native species in amongst it. Wood rushes and pimeas, geraniums, they are still there. So it's one of these situations where it's very depleted. It's been regarded as wasteland by a lot of people, not worth even looking at. Is it native? Not even sure if it's native. But now we know a lot more about it, and because there's so little left, what we have left is elevated.
Yeah, thank you. I was pleased you raised the issue of visibility from the walking track above Forest Heights. As Mr. Lee mentioned earlier, had a look this morning, looking down. In your evidence, you've noted that, reference to Mr. Espy, who says the south side of the river is the same landscape as the extensive built-up suburban area. Could you also say that the characteristics that south face exhibits are similar to the existing open space over the walking track goes through?
In some respects, in that it's got patches of kanaka, but the cover in between kanaka on that east side is all exotic. It's quite a different kind of character. Aesthetically, it's very pleasant and it's got a natural sort of character, I suppose, but it's not nearly as natural as the walking track.
Yeah.
Except at the west end.
The other question I had, I think I've partially had it answered by reading what you said a little more closely. You talk about the part that used to be visionary landscape. Obviously, that's not, the VAL isn't there anymore by virtue of the development of the Peninsula Bay itself. The part that you say should be effectively taken off the O&L and become part of the O&L, it was originally excluded. Have the characteristics of that piece of land changed over time such that you can now say it's over now, rather than just adding on as a matter of convenience for one of a better word?
I think it's actually, looking at it a different way, the characteristics are always there. But because of the visual catchment approach, because it was more of a visual catchment approach, the lake on one side and sealed out on the other, that was more of the foundation on which it was divvied up, if you like, rather than its actual inherent characteristics. And the tussock grassland was always there. It was there in 2003. years of it weren't as well known as they are now. You know a lot more now about what's important. And because of the change in context, what is there now visually, natural character-wise, and as well as ecologically, has elevated because of the development in front of it.
Yeah, I understand.
So I know that the character of the land, I suppose, it may have become more natural, as Mr. Howarth was alluding to. The Karnak has grown, obviously, in 13 years. But on the other hand, we've had lack of river control, there's been wilding pine spread. So there have been some effects that are less positive, but unless there was a full survey done in 2003 and a full survey done now, you couldn't be categorical about whether it's improved from an ecological sense. But from my observations, it hasn't changed. The species are all still there, the tussocks are all still there, showing the signs of rapidly disappearing.
That you may be here, Mr. Howarth was giving his evidence. One comment he made was that we shouldn't be hung up on the old now. And I just wonder, from looking at it from the Forest Heights track, so I guess you're a reasonable person. Looking at that, would appreciate the landscape irrespective of whether it was a classified as a mass management landscape.
Absolutely.
Or if they are, their experience is simply what they see, their appreciation of its presentness.
Yeah, there's no lines that you suddenly impose on the family.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, no, helpful, thank you. One of the main back to this plan here and the debate about the yellow and our line, I guess down this end of the area. You know, where the Kānuka is.
Yep.
Yeah. Even if we were to find that the ONL did follow where you've proposed it to be and Dr. Reid has proposed it to be, the policies and the plan, I understand, still talk about a subdivision or development within the ONL may still be appropriate where it could be absorbed within the landscape. You know,
that's
things
true.
Could be absorbed, yeah. So there's sort of another question, even if that is ONL, doesn't mean a complete no-no. Possibility, you know, and I guess then becomes the next question, well, could that area absorb some housing or some development?
You can ask me to answer that if you like, but
yes.
I'm not as an expert as an advocate, really, because it's about the effects. But and clearly in this case, it would simply replace the ONL 100%, so you can't say that it would accommodate it because the ONL would disappear. It would be covered in lots.
Yeah. Because that's, I mean, you're talking about the earthworks there and the buildings and the physical
some of
form.
The Kānuka might stay, but it's, how many houses is it? Quite a number of houses. It's nonsensical to say, oh, it can be absorbed.
Yeah.
It's clearly it wouldn't be.
Yes. And I guess, it's, I mean, some of the questions from just had before, even if the ONL line was, you know, so the court talked about it being on the ridge line, and I'm not, you know, where that is, but that may be the approximation of the brown line. I guess there's still areas in there outside the ONL where there's still landscape value associated with the areas. I mean, it might be necessarily ONL type level, but presumably there's another sort of level down which is still worthy of.
Well, that's your BAL level, but
I mean that context's not quite right, is it here anymore?
Well, you couldn't because it's too small.
No.
Just a little scrap left. What was a much bigger BAL than Penrith Park right over to Town, basically.
Yeah. I guess just to take the point a bit further, like this plan here, this area A2, I presume that, I don't think that's in an ONL type area.
No, that was part of the BAL then.
Yeah, well, that's right, but it was sort of VLO, it was sort of seen as a sort of useful, sort of, you know, outstanding natural landscape somewhere around here, urban development, but it was sort of a bit in between, you know, landscape wise. Amenity wise, was worthy of setting aside from development.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's not really a VAL type category, is it? Once we're sort of urbanising the area, it's some other sort of landscape value that's in between outstanding natural landscape, urban development, there's sort of an area in between.
Yeah, in that case, that area was considered to be. Too upstanding, I guess, and too high.
Yeah.
You looked at it from across the other side of the bay there, looked across, allowing housing right up to see the forest was considered
right.
Too far up the hill,
too
basically.
Far.
yeah. and losing that sort of feeling that life is contained by its natural sources. As well as, I mean, there was quite a bit of karnaka on there as well, as you've seen.
And I think just interpreting in what's shown in here, I mean, this gets back to the sort of lots 7 to 12 or something, isn't it? I mean, as you say, it's a bit fuzzy, but there's sort of, if you look at it from a landscape point of view, from a natural ecology point of view, there's sort of this area in here.
It becomes very difficult to say that it's still on and on.
Yes.
But I qualify that by saying that it does need to be rehabilitated.
It's
kept as open space.
Yeah.
It could become grey shrubbery and plant and that. And when it matured, you'd say, well, that's great, because it does, you know, it's consistent.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, that's great.
Just pointing out on that map, the areas of the best view tussock grassland are all south of that line, basically. There is some north of the line, but the best areas are actually in here and across here.
Oh, okay.
So by having the ONL up, you're missing out most of those four best view tussock grasslands.
I still don't know where the ONL is.
No.
Look it up, planning maps for council, there's no ONL. And I've seen about three different ONLs now, depending on where they came from.
Yes.
However,
that's one of the things
that's right. We hope that some of you people from us might help you with that decision.
Now, last Twitter for the day, Aspiring Tracks Network.
Commissioners, thank you for hearing the Aspiring Tracks Network. My name is Ella Lawton, I'm the chair for the network, and I haven't provided any additional information, and really in terms of my purpose for being here today is to clarify or answer any questions that you might have about our submission. I understand that there has been additional maps and submissions by the submitter on this, and by Infinity on this, and I haven't, I guess, formally updated our information. I guess the main points we just wanted to note again that our primary purpose is to ensure that the track network currently remains intact and that any further tracks that are created are of a high standard and that are purpose-built for a range of track users, and that's in particular ensuring that there's not additional conflicts created by different track users as well. We realise that's a big part of this, the Wanaka grows, we need to ensure that the track network grows with it and grows in a good way. And I guess we just wanted to reiterate that we are neutral in terms of the decision, but any decisions made in terms of how the track is that the tracks and the recreational use in that area Going forward, we do have some quite, I think, clear guidelines about what we would like to see. I'd like to thank Infinity and the team for engaging us early on, and it has been a good conversation, and there has been some, you know, substantial changes made based on the feedback we've given, so I just wanted to acknowledge that.
Brilliant, thank you. Do you want to just hand it around that little diagram? You want to just tell us what we should be?
So it was in my initial submission, and the reason I wanted to highlight it again is just that the area that we're talking about is just next to the Venus Landing area, which is circled there. So when we're talking about the track network, that area above the proposed plan change is integral to the track network, and that is only the White Wanaka map. There are actually a large number of informal tracks around that area, which are integral to, I guess, more so for walkers and recreational use other than your mountain biking.
I mean, I understand that, you know, there's been some, I'm not sure what the right word is, commitments made with Infinity about car park locations, you know, about either end of the subdivision, tour blocks, those sort of things we've talked about.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, from my understanding, and as I said, I haven't gone into great detail with the new proposal. There are certainly, from what I understand, the car park on the northeastern side, towards the sticky forest end of the development, in terms of that car park and the toilet immersion block proposal, are definitely things that we had recommended and asked for. The movement of the track to further down through the urban area and near the cul-de-sac is also something that we appreciated. So moving it away from the Venus Landing area to the end of the road here, so that the track, I guess, it's clearer about the use of that track. We were very concerned about the track coming down to Venus Landing and then pedestrians crossing over with a lot of cyclists in that used area.
Yes.
So that is an improvement in our, from our perspective, as is, again, the car park up here. Because I guess it just formalises its use, and a toilet, which is generally something that we need in many places throughout our community. The other improvement made was they did move that centre track and created a bit of a car park down the edge. I'm not clear exactly on the proposal in terms of the track width, but from my understanding, I think it was slightly wider than what they initially proposed.
I think it's 1.5 now. Yeah.
Right. So that, I guess it, ensuring that it aligns with the QLDC track requirements for recreational tracks.
Just looking at submission. Comment on this, if you wish to. It's got the air that the aspiring tracks need to see a net gain out of this proposed track change.
No, I wouldn't go so far to say that. The aspiring track network are quite happy with the work that's gone into that area and the way that it's being used. So we want to see it as a net gain.
No, okay, that's interesting, that's helpful. Just wanted to clarify one point, it's back on the plan that came through the submission.
I can give you a slightly larger one if it helps.
Yes,
the
that's right.
Visual.
Was just the one marked B. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Sure.
So this discussion came about from, I guess, our understanding of when we read through the initial proposal, was that this development was to further connect the urban area of Pen Bay to the lake, and there is no access along that area other than on a mountain bike, and it's for, you know, I guess advanced mountain bikers only. So it was something that we saw would be incredibly valuable. It's a little tricky in terms of the development of land that isn't actually part of the development.
No.
So we're very aware of that.
Yeah.
I guess it was one of the things we saw as supporting their vision and
right.
what they said they would do, really.
Yeah, right.
And just to note that that line would not actually work like that. I mean, it would be, that would perhaps allow it to be a set of stairs. But even then it would be very steep stairs. So it is a very difficult place to put in a connection, and we really realise that. But we thought we would submit anyway in terms of that's what we saw as, you know, that would possibly be, that would be beneficial.
Right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a, I think it's dock land, I think, isn't it, from the, most of it from the lake shore back up.
Future access, showing on Bull Ridge at the moment, but informal access off Mount Gold Place, is it?
Mount Gold Place. Which one's Mount Gold Place? Yes, so there is a car park further back along the ridge. Is that the one you're talking about in terms of formal access?
Just the one that's under development at the moment.
Bullridge, I haven't been up there in a couple of months, but I don't understand that there is any development as yet. So that was an initial change to that. That has been a subsequent change from the conversations we've had about allowing, because it's a, I guess, from our tracks expert, Tim, who has come on board, he suggests that this isn't a particularly valuable track in that it doesn't really go anywhere. I guess it provides a loop for people who live in that immediate area, but we were concerned that, I guess one way of adding value is at least having a car park where people could go if they wanted to specifically go there. We would hope that no one too local are going to fly there, allowing for sorts of track users.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry, just to follow that on, I was busy looking at something else, but you were just saying then that the walking track that's been proposed, you're sort of saying you see that more as sort of a local amenity.
More so now that it's a loop. This initial one wasn't, we were concerned about the conflict between users and all sorts of things. The new one at least keeps them separated. At least it's a loop from one end of the development to the other.
Yeah.
I guess if you were going to use it as a loop, though, there are still sort of barriers in terms of road crossings and things because there's only walkways on one side of the road.
Right.
So it's still not ideal, but it was improved since their initial proposal.
Yeah. Okay, great. Okay. No, thanks for coming along and just... just helping out there, that's great. Thank you for making yourself available. That's very helpful.
Best of luck.
Yes, thank you. Right. Well, that's the end of the submitters. And obviously tomorrow we've got the council council experts to get through. Just had a discussion just before around afternoon tea. I think there's some supplementary, whatever we might call it, evidence coming through from the council experts. I think that's been circulated now, isn't it, Julia? Yeah. Apart from Miss Jones and they have updated on planning, but this is from Dr. Reed and yeah, right. So there's three bits of evidence coming in. I think it's been circulated around now. What we'll do is we'll have a bit of a best we can read through it tonight, tomorrow morning, so we can sort of spend time tomorrow, you know, more in question mode around those issues. So we sit down to start at 10 o'clock, so I think we'll stick to that time, 10 o'clock, and give us time to sort of read it. And we'll get through that material, and hopefully, I guess we'll be able to sort of, probably the morning, I imagine, will get us through. And at that point, we can work out how we might deal with the requester's reply. Again, I mean, we'd be happy to take that in writing, if that gives you a bit of time to respond to the material that's going to come through. Probably sensible, but it's up to you.
I think we'll need that. And yeah. As I say, I was just back in the main act to Gary's
yes. Yeah. Possibly yeah. No, I think we're happy to receive a bit of, you know, if there's some matters that you want to, obviously it's all additional stuff, we'll rebut that, the new stuff that's come through.
Yeah.
Don't want to rehash all the evidence we've had today. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, I think we'd be happy to accommodate that. So, yeah, problems. Yeah. So maybe tomorrow, just the end of the day, we can work out a bit of a program for that once we've got a feel for what you might want to do in terms of a timeline. Yeah. Okay. Great. Thank you. Thanks to the submitters. See you everyone tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Yeah.